Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
You have tried to change my country. You've tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help BDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. We'll save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
We most certainly do. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the East Anglian's EDL radio show, broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. East Anglian's EDL radio show, the official English Defence League's radio station, the voice of the EDL. I'm not sure who my co-host of the show is this evening. I've got someone who's sitting in the studio with me. So I'm not too sure of how things will be going tonight, but Guys, I've had a lot of positive feedback from last night's show. We had a very, very busy chat room last night, and as I say, the studio was just lit up. It was a very, very busy. A busy studio. It was really a pleasure to see. And the trouble is that when it gets so busy, it gets a little bit confusing now and again. You know, when you're trying to keep track, and it was good. Carol was doing an excellent job with keeping track of the in the chat room last night, and you know, putting the questions that people was asking in the chat room. I've got to thank Carol for great works that she did last night. As I say, I've had some very positive feedback from the show from last night. And hopefully, in the very near future, you know, we'll probably have Tim back at some time, Mr. Tim Ablett. So that'd be great for future shows. As I say, tomorrow we have got a demonstration, a national. Of course, it's going to be very, very busy tomorrow in Exeter. I know it's going to. I just feel really good about it. I've got a couple of. I think it's around the vicars or priests or something. We're having a bit of a pot about it, but never mind. I will read out in a little while. It's nothing that we don't get every time we demonstrate somewhere. There's always someone. The men of the cloth who stand up and try to oppose us, which I think is ridiculous. It's the church opposing what we do. But there again, you got dimmies in all sections of life, haven't you, ladies and gentlemen? So we don't expect anything different. Anyway, what I'm going to do, I've got he's my co-host at this moment in time, and the panelist is very own Cat Strangler 101, Mr. Tim Burton. It's always a pleasure to see you, sir, and I hope you're well this evening.
I am indeed, Jeff. I'm exceedingly well, thank you. I'm sorry I'm a little late logging on. It's not like
no
me.
No problem.
Unfortunately, I realised there was a cup of tea that had to be taken up to she who must be obeyed. And
I'm going
to do that. I'll never hear the end of it. Here I am, yes, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Yes.
How did you enjoy the show? It was a very busy night last night, wasn't it, Tim?
It was a busy night, and I did say to myself before I started, now I'm not going to monopolise his time because there'll be a lot of people who'll want to get on and ask questions. And I'd no sooner started to talk to him than I thought of a question I wanted to ask. And apparently, so I'm told, I tend to use 10 words where one will do when it comes to asking questions. So I apologise for any excess time I might have taken up on the show for doing that.
It's good that, you know, when people, you know, like, you know, when to put a question towards Mr. Ablett, that... it's nice though that he gets a bit of in-depth, how to answer, sort of thing.
Yeah.
He was put on the spot a little bit, wasn't he? You know,
I think you can't blame him for being slightly, I won't say evasive with his answers, but there are things that we are only really going to find out as they develop and
as
they
become. As time goes by, yeah. Yes. I mean, it's still... As we all know, it's still in the pot and everything's still brewing away nicely. Only time will, you know, when the time's right, as you know, I always make statements. If I'm asked to put a statement out there, you know, behalf of the organisation, that's exactly what I do. Like I did last night, you know, it was so important that, you know, before Tim come on that we made that statement. I think it was quite like, I wouldn't say so much evasive, but it's trying to direct the questions in a positive way, but not giving anything away too much because it's still in talks. Certain things are still in talks and different things, you know, the way that we're going to be moving along. So you don't want to preempt things, you know,
I mean, it's quite understandable that people who make up the rank and file of the EDL and who listen in on these radio shows, it's quite understandable that they ask the questions that they did. I mean, there was people who were rightly concerned about possible infiltration of the EDL at demos, and it's quite right to be concerned
about
that.
It's a feasible and it's a good question, because as Tim said, this has always been a problem right from the off. We've always had a situation, but the good thing about with us, what we've done is, as we've grown, we have now, as you know we there is pictures of taken of different people, these people when it causes problems. So, we know the type of people that we're looking towards. And if we do see anybody that's maybe of it, we do keep a close eye on them. That's done every time. So when people say, we're concerned about infiltration, we've always been concerned about infiltration. And if we see anybody, as you know, that's what Tim said, they are treated robustly and thrown out of the demonstration. We do not want anything to do with these people, I think he highlighted that in a very positive way. That's the way we've always been. But we still got, there's still people ask those questions. And of course it is a good question to ask, but it's something that we've always dealt with, on the day. It was going back a little while ago. I know Tommy came on the show and he said that there was some of them had tried to infiltrate and there'd been a little bit of a skirmish as such, because we don't want them, because they give, that's the trouble. You get these little scumbags and all of a sudden they start raising their hands in Nazi salutes and things like that. And everything that we do is thrown to the side, because you know that these lefties, little scumbags, are waiting for these pictures, because that is why they put the plant of people there, for that case. So if anything like that happens, they've got the cameras ready to take the pictures. And that's been the whole thing right the way along. Whatever, demonstrations, that they're there waiting for anything that they can, like angry men, you might have had a bottle thrown at you, and one of your mates might have been hurt. You're an angry man. They're the pictures they want to take and portray to the world. Do you see what I mean, Tim?
It's always been the case. I mean, I did write about this at some length in an essay that I published back in June, and I saw it happening myself. Not that I was on a street demo myself, but I could see it developing. They were agent provocateurs. I'm going to say that without the French accent, because it sounds totally stupid.
Provocateurs.
Agent provocateurs, right? Everybody knows what I'm talking about. And it's very difficult to avoid with a street protest unless you've got a very, very strong steward presence. And it's a difficult balance to strike, because, you might end up with more stewards than you actually have protesters, which would kind of defeat the object of the whole exercise. But yes. Unfortunately, it's one of those things about the nature of street protests is that it's an inherent difficulty, and all you can really do is deal with it as strongly as you can, encourage everybody who goes on a demo to take their own video footage, because it's a cheap and easy thing to do now, and so that if anybody does subsequently find themselves either arrested or in a compromising position. Well, that's not a compromising position. In a position. All right, quiet tiger. There we go.
Compromising position.
Where they have a photograph of themselves taken on a demo which shows them in less than a favourable light, they can at least say, this is the reason behind it. All right, you could say the damage might have been done by then, and the pictures might be out in the media. And there's, at the end of the day, there's very little you can do about that. If the mainstream media want to resort to underhand tactics to get those sort of pictures, then it's unfortunately only too easy for them to do it. But all you can really do is go out with the best of intentions, take the best security precautions that you can take under the circumstances, and just accept that it will maybe never go 100% the way you want, but that it's more important that you get the message out, even if you do have the downside of having to keep some of these agent provocateurs, keep an eye open for them, and deal with them as they turn up. It's just one of those things about street protests that I don't think you're ever going to be able to get away from 100%.
And this is what we're trying to put out there, that it is so difficult being a street movement, a pressure group as we are. As you know, you do get people. Like, if say we go to Exeter, you might find some of the locals will join in with what we're doing, but then again, some of those might not be, like got the EDL or nature at hand, but they could be, you know, something like the National Front or something like that, but they just want to be there and sort of join in with the EDL and before you that. Sometimes that's the problem. But I've got to say that a lot of local people that have joined in with our demonstrations, and there's been a lot, have been always pretty good. You know, it's their town, it's their city that we go to, and they want to make their voices heard with us because we're there for them. So it works different ways, Tim. And as you say, we can't always get it spot on. There's always things that could have been done a little bit better. But we always, the thing about it is we do tend to look back on different demonstrations. And from when we first started out to what we do now, you notice the police even, different places to go, they are more favourable towards us as what they was going back a few years ago. Apart from when you go into like the heart of London, places like, Tower Hamlets, the Islamic Emirates sort of thing, where Sharia law is being used by the local police constabulary in that region. That is the problem that we've got there, as we see the time with Tommy Robinson and Kevin Carroll when they was that walk through, and they was going to go through through Tower Hamlets as such, well, on the outskirts of it, and they was attacked, and then they was arrested.
I saw the footage. Yeah, absolutely appalling. Yeah, I mean, somebody in the chat room called FDG0 has made the very valid point. How do you deal with agent provocateurs, if they're hired by the police? Or even if
I think it's very difficult. Tim, that is a very good, valid point. Is we just deal with the situation as it arises. If we got these type of people, I mean, what happened to Tommy Robinson and Kevin Carroll? There wasn't a lot you could do. This was, we said this before. It was set up so that that would be attacked. But the thing at the time, I thought, well, it could have been so easy. These guys walked across the road. They could have had a gun. Could have had a knife. And the police stood by, watched what was happening. Tommy and Kevin could have been dead, but that's the way it looked at the time. It was so, it just makes you so angry that these things, it was a setup. It was totally a setup. This is where they walked across the road and had a go at Kevin and tried to have a pot at Tommy. And then when they were saying, Tommy was saying, aren't you going to arrest them? You can arrest them. They just assaulted my cousin and tried to assault me. And the police didn't say nothing. These guys walked away from assaulting people. Yeah. I can't believe it.
Yeah. I saw the whole thing on video.
It was ridiculous. But it just goes to show the world. I mean, that's That video was viral. That went viral, as you know, Tim. It was right away around the globe. And everybody looked and going, well, what the hell's going on in the UK? Why are the police acting this way?
I think this is why it's so important. With the cost of video recording hardware falling to really low levels, I mean, everybody now has a video camera on their mobile phone. And even if you want to get a purpose-built camcorder to carry around with you, it doesn't actually cost that much now. If we have people routinely on these demos and in any other public event that they happen to be involved with, where that kind of thing might happen, if the police know that they're going to be recorded, they might just be a little bit more circumspect about what they do, because I'm quite certain that up until fairly recently, they have felt absolutely no compunction at all at, shall we say, bending the law a little bit in order to make the EDL look bad. And those kind of tactics, I mean, it's easy for us to sit here and say, well, they shouldn't be happening in a civilized society, but the fact is they are happening. And freedom lovers such as the EDL and people of not just in I'm thinking of the more recent past, not necessarily the EDL, but anybody who stood up against the status quo, against what the establishment wanted, often found themselves to be the recipients of dirty tactics by the police. And all right, they might say this happened to me, and a policeman lied on his statement or lied in court, and it's his word against theirs, and it's very difficult to sometimes determine what's actually happened. But nevertheless, if you've got lots of people who routinely record these kind of things as a matter of course, and then have access to YouTube and to the internet and all sorts of other alternative media outlets to get that message out, then I think that it will be become apparent to everybody that this sort of thing is just not acceptable. It shouldn't be happening, and that people who in positions of authority who do abuse that authority will be exposed. And I think we have to do a lot more of that, and make it clear to government, police, media organisations that we're not just going to accept their word as to what's been happening when they try and pull a fast one. I ought to add a disclaimer and say that in my personal experience of the police, they've always been very fair. I mean, I haven't actually put myself in a position where I might have been exposed to those sort of tactics. But I just don't believe that the average policeman in the street is badly disposed to the EDL. My view is that
I would agree. We've often spoke about that, Tim, that the boys and girls...
I think we have to accept that they're not going to be able to make their views plain in public, because it could be a career killer. And we just have to accept that. But all right, those are the parameters that we are placed under. We just have to make the best of it. When you have a street protest, you've got to take all the security precautions you can. During the event, record as much as you can. Make sure that any unusual events are fully recorded, and jump on anybody who looks like they might cause trouble. And I say jump on them, I don't mean beat them to a pulp. Obviously, we have ways of dealing with them, which doesn't...
You know, robustly, treat them robustly, remove them. I think that is that's the better word to be used, isn't it? It's what the police would use, a word robustly. Remove people, or we'll be robustly.
Well, I mean, if anybody wants to know how to handle people robustly without it looking robust, I would say to them, take up Aikido. I'm speaking from personal experience here. I've done it for 10 years. I've got a black belt in Aikido, and it's amazing what you can do with it. And it doesn't look like you're hurting anybody at all, even as you break their bones in several places while you're doing it. It just doesn't look like
good
anything.
Grief.
So you can hand them over to the authorities with their arm broken in three places.
Very practical.
Nobody Nobody would even guess that that's been done. So I shouldn't really give
that,
away.
Now that's news to me. I didn't know that you was an Aikidi black belt, Tim.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I didn't know that.
One doesn't like to blow one's own trumpet, but, you know, at least I'm telling you
well,
I have a trumpet.
Yeah, you're better off blowing a trumpet than playing the violin, so I've been told to him.
Oh, yeah, quite, yeah. But it's
oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's all right. It's a useful skill to have, and it does mean that you can deal with people who might be potentially violent and without drawing blood, without looking as though you're being particularly violent yourself, you can take them down really, really effectively with the minimum of
effort.
And it
is really a form of defence, isn't it, Tim?
It's a form of defence that I would recommend to anybody and everybody. I used to do, many years ago, I'm taking it away from the EDL a minute just to expand on this. Many years ago, I used to do other martial arts, taekwondo and karate. I've done martial arts in one or another for about 30 years, but I found I was getting beat up a lot with taekwondo and karate, and I thought I've got to find something when I'm well. It's a young man's sport. If you go into it late in life, which is to say after you're over 30 years old, that's pretty late in life to be taking up karate. You do get the rough end of the stick, and you can get hurt quite easily. But if you start young, your body adapts to it. But with Aikido, With Aikido, you can go into it at any age. I took it up when I was 50. I did it for 10 years, got me black belt, and you can use it into your 70s and 80s because it's that sort of sport.
That's great for our listeners. And as I say, you took it up quite late in life, didn't you, Tim? It's benefited you.
Yeah. Well,
we'll say to anybody, I think it is a good way forward. It keeps you fit. And of course, at the same time, it's a good way, a brilliant way to be able to defend yourself in a proper way, without causing too much damage, but at the same time, looking after your own interests, isn't it, really? So
well,
I'd like to thank you for that little bit of information.
Well, it is. And it's, I'd say if anybody wants to learn any little bit of self-defense because they think it might come in handy on an EDL demo, Aikido is certainly a good way to go. That's all I don't want to take up a lot of the time on the show.
We should actually talk about these issues.
Yeah.
Tim, you know, I mean, that's we do all aspects about the EDL and how to look after each other and even if it is to, you know, take up Taekwondo and other things like that, you know, because if you go on a demonstration or something like that, you never know when you're going to come under some sort of attack, and you don't want to cause anybody any, but if you can, I don't know if you can disarm them or whatever they're wanting to do to you without too many problems, then so be it, you know. But I've just looked to say, it caught me on a little while ago in the chat room. I think it was Army. I can't remember who's put it in there, but I just see it, and it caught my eye. And it's talks about, and it's from The Guardian, it's heavily armed taxi driver was on his way to kill David Cameron. Caught here, and it says, like, Ifrak Naz was stopped in London with a 950,000-volt stun gun. My God, that's a massive one there. Samurai sword and masking tape in his Vauxhall Astra. It goes on to say...
If you've got a Vauxhall Astra, you probably need the masking tape just to stop the bits falling off it. But that's another story. You carry on, Jeff. Never mind me.
Thank you, Tim. Police found a cache of weapons, including a 950,000-volt stun gun, in the car of a man who said he was on the way to kill David Cameron. A court was heard. Ifrak Naz, 34, also had hammers, kitchen knives, a machete, an unsheathed samurai sword, and masking tape in his Vauxhall Astra when he was stopped in July after going the wrong way down a North London street. Officers later searched his home in Middlesbrough and found the Downing Street postcode and the names of other prominent political figures. The taxi driver was detained under the Mental Health Act and last month admitted possessing a prohibited weapon, 3 counts of possessing an offensive weapon, listen to this, 7 counts of having a bladed article and dangerous driving. Judge Simon Bourne Acton, the recorder of Middlesbrough, imposed a hospital order with restriction order, meaning Naz can only be released with the permission of the Home Secretary. It just goes on a little bit more, Home Secretary. Teesside Crown Court heard how he drove from Middlesbrough to London in the early hours of 16th of July and by 4 a.m. had reached Kentish Town. He drove his blue Vauxhall Astra the wrong way down Camden High Street, a one-way street, for 3/4 of a mile, causing oncoming traffic to take evasive action. Police were called and tried to stop his car, but he carried on until he got caught in a jam at the junction with Euston Road. Concerned he might attempt to drive on, officers smashed their way into his car and detained him. It was then the defendant stated that he was on the way to kill the Prime Minister, David Cameron. Nick Dreyer, prosecuting, said he was found to have a knuckle duster in his shirt pocket and an 18-inch hunting knife in his waistband of his trousers. Police were concerned about his behaviour and found he had previously spent a month at Rosebery Park Hospital, Middlesbrough, as a mental health patient. Dry added a search of his vehicle revealed other weapons in the driver's door panel. Were 3 8-inch kitchen knives between the driver's seat and the door, was a samurai sword. Its sheath found nearby in the passenger footwell. From the rear seat, officers recovered a claw hammer, a lump hammer, and an axe, which were in a plastic bag that also contained, masking tape. In the boot, they found a machete and a stun gun shaped as a knuckle duster. The device, a blast knuckles, 950,000. That is massive, Tim, isn't it? 950,000 volt stun gun was found
It's not
order.
The voltage. It's not so much the voltage. It's the current that it supplies that kills you. A combination of the voltage and the current together that determines exactly what happens to you when it's supplied. But, it's certainly a high voltage. And
that's one of the biggest that I've ever heard about. I've heard of 100,000, but 950,000, but that's the highest I've ever heard about, to be quite honest with you, Tim.
Well, if you have it applied to you, you probably wish you hadn't. But it is a combination.
It'd probably kill me because of my back, because my heart. Well, you'd probably dead.
Right. It does depend on exactly who you're applying it to, and what part of the body you're applying it to, and all, there are all sorts of variables. I mean, people say the taser is like a non-lethal weapon, but it depends entirely on how it's applied. And as you say, if you've got a very high voltage strength one, if you are not careful, then you might end up on a murder charge, even if you only wanted to restrain somebody.
I mean, they do class it as a dangerous weapon. You know, if you did get caught, it's a prisonable sentence anyway. I think they really come down heavy on people that they come across with those type of things, didn't they, Tim? Very, very strict on those sort of things that they've found, people found to add them on themselves. This guy,
samurai sword as well. Now, I know that the police look very unkindly on people who are moving samurai swords around in public. One of the things I had to do when I was going in for an Aikido competition one time, they have a section there for samurai sword, not competitive fighting, but it's the art of drawing the sword and practicing moves. And if you have to move your samurai sword around from one place to another, there's very, very tight restrictions on exactly how you can do it. You can't just sort of stick it in the boot of your car and drive around in it because you'll end up in trouble.
No, that's a good point. But, yeah, it just it caught my eye when I see that, you know, and was reading that out, that it could have been very nasty. I mean, he might not have actually got to Cameron, but it could have been other unsuspecting people that could have been attacked. But it does sound like this is a mental issue with this guy.
Yeah, could have been Nick's leg, and that would have been terrible. It's all right. I'm feeling in a jovial mood tonight. Don't mind me. Don't mind me. You carry on, Jeff.
No, that's okay, Tim. But what I was going to do, I'm going to, because you say we've got the Exeter demo tomorrow, Tim, and I need to talk to someone who's just he's been sitting there patiently for a little while. I need to have a quick chat to him before we bring him on, like. So, and of course, we got Sue from New Mexico, who's sitting listening on her device on her phone and that. God bless you, Sue. I think we got someone else who's sitting listening on their device as well. So thank you, guys. Anybody's out there listening on different devices, it's an honour and privilege to have you listening to the show. So thank you so much. Tim, are we going to... Okay. Well, where did I put this now? Where to put the extra of the demo?
Kel's in the chat room saying, don't forget to play the Exeter Rally clip, Jeff. Yeah, good to see you, Kel. I was sorry to see Kel.
As I said, last night she done a sterling job, didn't she, Tim?
Well, right up to the point where Tommy came in and knocked her off the co-hosting spot. And I sent her a little message this afternoon saying, I hope you're going to take him off your Christmas card list, Kel, because that's not the first time he's done that. He's got form for it, you know.
Yeah, it was very busy, and Tommy had already said that he said to wish everybody a great night, and sorry he couldn't be there, but when we was at the show, and of course we had Tim, and we had other people called in, all of a sudden Tommy called back in, of course Kel took up the position of co-host, and it just threw her off, and also... I couldn't see myself. I had to reopen up the chat room because when he came, it threw me off the chat room as well. So, you know, these things happen, and, you know, we got on with it. And as I say, the feedback I've had from the show was very, very positive. So, but these things happen. A lot of people don't know what goes on, but, you know, these things do happen, and we just roll with it, don't we, Tim? You know, that's the way it goes.
Indeed.
But anyway, I'm going to play this, guys, as I say, because we've got a demonstration tomorrow. Anybody that's travelling who might be on the way already, safe journeys, guys. Some people got to travel from one side of the country to the other, like they normally do. You know, my thoughts and prayers go with all the boys and girls tomorrow who's been in Exeter. I'm sure it's going to be a very successful demonstration. I've heard there's going to be some good speakers as well. So there you go. But with that, this is the Exeter Demo by Martin Hyams. Thank you, Martin.
If you are sick and tired of the growing threat of Muslim terrorism, our government's lack of action about the burqa, money being diverted in the NHS to treat cases of female genital mutilation, the media's covering up of cases of Muslim paedophile gangs, and our politicians' cowardice, half-truths and lies about all of these things, then come and have your voice heard in Exeter on Saturday, the 16th of November.
English Defence League is not about race, and it never was. It is about making Britain's politicians listen to the people who live in this country. And that is why they have tried to silence us. No matter who you are or where you are from, you will be made welcome. If you stand alone, you will be ignored. But together, we can make a difference.
There you go. That's the courtesy of Martin Ive. So there you go, and that's the EDL demo in Exeter tomorrow. I just had a quiet talk to someone who's one of our. He's normally one of our panelists, and it's always great to have him on the show. I'm going to bring him in right now because he's been sitting there quite patiently for a little while. And, of course, that's Mr. Michael Green. So, Michael, welcome to the East Anglian ZDL radio show. Good to have you on the show again this evening.
Hello, Jeff, and hello, Tim. And
yeah,
hello,
Michael.
And if Kel is somewhere in the vicinity, hello to you, Kel.
There you go.
Kel was in the chat room, am I correct?
She was in the chat room,
heard me. Yes. Yes, she's in the chat room, yes.
Yeah, gentlemen, so I'd like to give you a little of my feedback, my thoughts on yesterday's interview with Tim Albert. I think he's great. He speaks very well, and he made a lot of great points overall. And then, of course, unfortunately, there was a call that came in that a little disconcerting. I just want to make a brief statement and not to get caught up on it because I know it's a whole topic. I believe the EDL should openly support the nation of Israel for many reasons. One of the most important ones is that since 1948, since this little country started to blossom and grow, the people in that nation have been at war, physical war, of course, on the battlefield fighting Islamic fascism. Many people don't understand the dynamics over there. The fact is that they are taught to kill Jews for Allah. It's very clear. It's all throughout the teachings of the Palestinian Authority, Fatah, especially Hamas in Gaza, Fatah, the PA in the West Bank. Back to the days of Yasser Arafat, that great bloodthirsty terrorist. So we are really in the same situation. You know, they've been fighting these people over there in the Middle East. All this hatred against them, hatred against Jews and the Quran. Islam is filled with hatred for Jewish people. And, you know, people talk about Zionism and we hate Zionists and Zionists are bad people. This is not necessarily true. These people, I believe, have a right to that land, not that Arabs don't.
Yeah.
But if the Arabs slash Muslims do not want to live in peace, and I would say most of them do not from my research. They want to push the Jews into the sea. They believe Jerusalem should be entirely their capital. Interesting, because Muhammad never went to Jerusalem physically. He went in an alleged dream. So my perspective is I hope the EDL, after the new year, I heard Tim speaking about they're going to have some kind of conference or meeting. I really hope they come out in support of the nation of Israel, because I think if they don't, the downside will be the elements that you were speaking about earlier, the neo-Nazi types, you know, which are filled with hatred for Jews, which would include Israel and Jews in the land of Israel, will maybe see this as a sign or something positive. What's your opinion on that, Tim?
My personal opinion is that Israel, since its formation, has been on the front line against the global jihad. And despite the British government in particular has been, in my view, totally on the wrong side in the criticisms that it's made of of Israel, and especially the one-sided treatment that not just the British government, but mainstream media in most European countries. I'm not too sure about the actual stance that some of the European governments might have, but certainly mainstream media seems to be very biased against Israel, and they totally overlook the fact that Israel being on the front line against the global jihad, if Israel were to fall, the global jihad would not stop. A lot of people seem to think that Israel is the problem in the Middle East that needs to be sorted out, where nothing could be further from the truth. And my personal view is that every non-Muslim person in the West, every person of reasonable goodwill, by which I mean mostly non-Muslim people in the West, should support Israel. I have to say that when Jan came on the show yesterday and she started laying into Tim Ablett with what sounded like she'd heard that the EDL were not going to support Israel for some one reason or another, she felt that was a mistake. And I have to say, on the face of it, I can't see why the EDL would withdraw support for Israel. Now,
I've got to say, I'm okay. In the same mindset, and I've always, my personal feeling is that I've always, this is one of the reasons I've always liked our support for Israel, always, and that is one of the, when I looked at the mission statement and everything about it, that is one of the reasons, because I've always had a lot of, when I was growing up, I had a lot of friends who were Jewish, and I've always supported Israel, and I will continue supporting Israel, no matter what people say or do, but this is my stance on it, whether, it's to do with the EDL stance, this is my stance.
I'd have to say the same as you, Jeff. I see absolutely no reason not to support Israel personally. And if somebody were to come up to me and say, would you support Israel in the same way as I support the EDL as a cause that I believe in, I'd have to say yes, I would, because they are the front line, and just because. All right, if the Arab nations sent blood in the Middle East and are emboldened sufficiently to bring Israel down, however that might occur, the global jihad will not stop. They will just move on to the next most easy target, and that's going to be us here in Europe and in this country. And well, not to mention every other Western country, but in terms of proximity, we're closer to the Middle East than some of the other Western countries, and we will be the next on their hit list, without a doubt. So I think we all ought to support Israel, because it's quite clear to me that their values are much closely aligned with ours than Islamic views are ever going to be. And for that reason alone, you can see it's in my view the right. Well, I say in my view, it should be in the view of every right-thinking person who's against the global.
Morally, the right thing to do. That's the way
the right
I'd like
thing to do is to support Israel. Yes. That's my view.
I agree.
Absolutely.
While we're on the discussion of the Israel situation that was being discussed last night, and as we are tonight, I've got also Frank from the EDL. He wants to chip in on the same issue as what we've been doing in support of Michael as well. So with that, I'm going to bring our very own Frank from the EDL. Frank, welcome to the show, brother. You had something to say about this topic that we were talking about, didn't you, Frank?
Oh, yeah, well, as soon as Mike came in with the supporting Israel, that was me. That's when I clicked number one and said, yes, I want to talk. Yeah, I'm all behind him. I think we all are. I don't see a difference between us and Israel at the moment. I don't think, in fact, Israel is, if anything, is just it's the caricature of what's happening to everybody else, but it's happening in such a small space. You can see it. I mean, I've linked up a newsletter from Israel Daily. I get it every day. There's stuff you read on there. But there's other things. You can go anywhere on YouTube and you can see Israeli soldiers sticking their neck out trying to save the Palestinian kids and rushing them to hospital because they've hurt themselves or they've been shot by their own side and looking after them and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And
I was going to say, Frank, it's no secret that Palestinians would far rather be treated in an Israeli hospital than they would be treated in one of their own Arab-run hospitals. That's no secret. And, of course, it's Israelis that are always on the front line whenever you get world disasters like the tsunami back in 2004 or more recently the typhoon in the Philippines. You always see teams of Israeli medical personnel and Israeli troops going over to help. When do you ever see when do you ever see help like that coming from Islamic countries? You never see it. I never see it.
Worse than that, when the soldiers go to help, all the other Palestinians throw rocks at them. It's ridiculous. And if nobody can see that, like I say, Israel, you look at Israel, what's happening to Israel is just a concentrated, easy to focus on of what's going on with the rest of us. I mean, this turn the other cheek business. That's all very that's all very fair. First time you get a slap in the gob, okay. You don't know why. You might have got the wrong end of the stick. You ask for an explanation, which is turning the other cheek. And if he slaps you again without the explanation, that's it. I've looked all through that book a few times, and there's nowhere in the Bible where it says you've got to drop your drawers and offer up your ass. There's only two cheeks, as far as I'm concerned. And the third go, well, if I can beat you to it, you've got to cop it. End of story.
May I weigh in now? And Frank made some great points. Tim, you're really spot on. The Western media has demonized the nation of Israel for decades. The BBC here in America, CNN, you know, all the networks in America, the New York Times, one of the most egregious offenders of this. Every time a Palestinian child or civilian would be hurt or injured, they would be on the front page of the paper. When it was an Israeli child murdered, Israeli civilians blown up on buses and restaurants, it would go back on page 18. The fact is that, let me just share something with you guys and the audience. Uh-huh. Here's a very typical teaching that's put forth to Palestinians even as young as age 5. It says, the Jews are the Jews. They have never been among them, and they never are supporters of peace. They are all liars. They are terrorists. Therefore, it is necessary to slaughter them, to murder them according to the words of Allah. It is forbidden to have them in your hearts. It is forbidden to have any mercy for the Jews in any place, in any land. Now, notice the reference to any land. They're not just talking about the land of Israel. This would be worldwide. So this is akin to Nazism.
Indeed,
war on the Jews. Make war on the Jews in any place that you find them. Any place that you meet with them, kill them. Kill the Jews and those that are among them and the Americans. They are all alike. Kill them.
And this is what's being taught to 5-year-old children,
isn't it?
Have you ever seen that program? Have you ever Googled Palestinian children's TV?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You see, it's just despicable. You see these young kids, 4 or 5-year-old little children who don't know anything, of course, and these Palestinian adults are the most vilest scum of the earth. And they raise their kids not just to hate Jews but to be a shaheed. And I know, Tim, you know what that is, and Jeff, and maybe Frank, and that is to do martyrdom. And that's martyrdom operations. That's the, you know, blow yourself up for Allah and take as many infidels with you as possible. So this is just vile hatred. They hate the Christians also. The Quran is filled with hatred for Christians or anyone who's a non-Muslim. Israel, as you said, Tim,
This was one of the things that was supposed to be addressed many years ago in the Oslo Accords, if I remember rightly, when the powers in the area were trying to sort out peace between Israel and the neighbours. One of the things that was supposed to have been done is that Palestinians in particular were supposed to drop all mention of Jew hatred from the curriculum, and the idea would be that in 15 or 20 years' time you would have a generation of children that would grow up that wouldn't be so heavily influenced by the Jew hatred of the previous generation. But of course that hasn't happened. Like every other agreement that Arabs or Palestinians ever make, they never keep their side of the bargain, and so the Jew hatred carries on being taught, even though they're the recipient of all this aid and everything from the rest of the world. They never fulfil their side of the bargain, and I would have thought it would be one of the very first things if you were negotiating between two people of goodwill. You would say, okay, we've made these terms, we've each accepted these terms, let's stick to the terms, shall we? That would be a nice thing to do. What a novel idea for an agreement. But of course, when you make an agreement with Arabs or Palestinians, it never works out like that.
No, that's because the teachings of Islam, we all know, provide for making false treaties. You know, Muhammad did it all the time. He would break the treaties and go and slaughter. But the problem also is that Fatah and Hamas have now joined together in a coalition government under Mahmoud Abbas, who's a murderous Palestinian, you know, one of Yasser Arafat's thugs. So, you know, the idea that there can be any peace is absurd when the people who are supposed to meet you across the negotiating table have this deep-rooted hatred, and now Hamas is part of the overall government of the Palestinian Authority. And Hamas, in their charter, anyone can find it online, it's 1988, the Hamas charter, it says unequivocally that they call for the total annihilation of the Jews.
That's the first few lines, isn't it, that Michael, if I remember right?
Yes, it is. It's a lovely document.
Pure hatred. I was going to say, guys, I just want, maybe we would take a couple of minutes, but it's a tune I want to play, because I think most of us who sit in here on our panel this evening are in favour with looking after Israel and doing what we've always done, and speaking up for Israel, like I've always done, and I've always done on the show. So there's a tune I want to play, and this is We Stand With Israel, and it's by Toot Sweet. So should we play this, guys, in support of Israel, yeah?
Sounds absolutely good. The Muslims are going to go crazy when they hear this. Wow.
All the more reason to play it. All the more reason to play it.
There you go. Okay then, guys, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back after this quick break. We Stand With Israel by Toot Sweet.
As the world turns around, history repeats itself again and again. As the world turns around, we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Stand with Israel, we stand with Israel. Stand with Israel,
America and Israel.
The devil's got himself a new disguise, wearing the mask of democracy right before our eyes.
Business out in Judea, your race fueling
the
flame.
The face of evil flies no flag while waging this unholy war.
Islam and the socialists side by side,
like the Nazis and Iranians in 1935.
Challenge you to debate social justice or caliphate.
Can socialism coincide with genocide? You decide.
As the world turns around,
history repeats itself again and again.
As the world turns around,
we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
We stand with Israel.
Side by side with Israel.
No one prepared for what they had in store,
until blood from the dead bodies washed up on their shores.
So many lives lost, remember the Holocaust.
An evil never seen
seen before, we thought would never happen again. Such pretty features the world adores, but it's the content of his character that cannot be ignored. Copenhagen has the lie on the fake, we don't fuck the lie. We stabilize, we organize until it's time they settle the score. As the world turns a blind eye, history repeats itself again. And as the world turns a blind eye, we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Stand with Israel.
We stand with Israel.
Agitating
the unrest as history's repeated.
As the world turns a blind eye,
the socialist, commies, and Islamic fascists have all realigned.
As the world turns a blind eye,
it's
2011, are we gonna regress back to 67?
As the world turns a blind eye,
as goes the plight of Israel, so goes the Western way of life.
As the world turns a blind eye,
stand with Israel.
Stand with Israel.
If you are sick and tired of listening to the lies you hear from politicians and the mainstream media about Islam, and you want to hear the truth about the crimes that are committed in its name in your country and all around the world, then please tune in to the East Anglian EDL radio show on blogtalkradio.com on Thursdays, Fridays and Sundays at 8:30 GMT and 3:30 EDT. For analysis, updates and news about Islam without any of the lies and political correctness that you hear in the mainstream media, and for updates, news and information about the English Defence League, then come and join us on Blog Talk Radio. You can also listen to all our previous broadcasts at any time by visiting the East Anglian EDL Radio Show archive. The East Anglian EDL Radio Show, the official radio show of the English Defence League.
Anybody there?
I am here.
I'm here. What happened?
Oh. It all went quiet very suddenly.
I was muted still. I've got to thank Martin Ive for that little commercial that he's made on behalf of the show, guys. I'm sorry, I was still muted. Welcome back, guys.
Okay, good. Kel has just put a note in the chat room asking if you can bring up Tim Ablett's point about there being no moderate Muslims. Did you want to elaborate on that one, Jeff?
No moderate Muslims. Well, I think that's open to discussion. As we all know, there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. A Muslim is a Muslim. I've often spoke about this. When they talk, moderate is something that people use that, oh, he's a moderate Muslim. I don't think we should really use it in the sense of that there is, the Muslim is a Muslim. And maybe you want to elaborate a little bit on that point, Tim, and Michael.
As I recall,
yeah, I think it's
Michael, Michael actually brought this point up, didn't he? And he said rather than use moderate or extremist, use the term practicing and non-practicing, because that, for several reasons, which I'll let Michael elaborate on, that's actually a much more useful term. Am I right when I say that, Michael?
I agree. The term moderate Muslim is an erroneous term. It's misleading, and it's not applicable. As we've discussed before, we have Muslims that faithfully follow the tenets, the precepts of Islam. They go to the mosque. They understand the Sharia is of the utmost importance. They take the Sharia very seriously, even in a Western country. They're still just waiting to see their full Sharia law, you know, hoping and praying for the day that Allah will, establish the caliphate. So there are people born, and I've met people here in America who were born into Muslim families who were not practicing Islam. They did identify themselves as a Muslim. I knew way more what was in the Quran than they did. They had really no clue about their alleged religion, and they didn't spend much time doing much of anything, but at the end of the day, they would, for some strange reason, identify themselves as Muslim. Maybe they see it in some type of cultural way as opposed to being in an alleged spiritual / religious way. Those that do faithfully, devoutly practice Islam are the ones, of course, that we all know, see and hear about and experience in the UK, in America, all through the Western world, who wish to either slaughter us, convert us, or push us down into a sewer somewhere.
The trouble is, of course, that even those Muslims who self-identify as cultural Muslims rather than devout religious Muslims, you still have to be able to ask the question, when the jihad comes, as it most certainly will, whose side are you going to be on? Because as we have seen in Syria only recently, Muslims and Christians who lived side by side for generations, and you would have thought that when the jihad came, the bonds of friendship would overcome the religious madness that seems to have infected every Muslim ever since 1400 years ago. You would have thought the bonds of friendship would be stronger, but they're not. When push comes to shove, when the jihad comes, can you count on a cultural Muslim rather than a devout religious Muslim? I think not. And that's really the crunch point that you've got to take on board, because we can talk all day about whether or not there are moderate Muslims. I agree with you, Michael. I personally don't believe there are moderate Muslims, but it goes much deeper than that. Even if somebody self-identifies as a cultural Muslim, if you can't ask them the question, all right, maybe you can ask them the question, they won't necessarily respond truthfully. But when the jihad comes, I would not want to have to rely on a cultural Muslim when the chips are down, because we have seen what happens in Syria.
Yeah, that's an excellent point to raise. That, yeah, Christians have lived in Syria. Actually, the Christians were there before the Muslims, just like in Egypt. Of course, no one knows that. But yes, and since the jihad came to the land of Syria, there's been a massive slaughter of Christians. And so, of course, the Muslims that live in Syria, what is their position on this? Unfortunately, the majority of them will side with the jihadists, maybe one to save their own neck, maybe two because they have that common bond. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that the common bond is that they are Islamic or Muslim. So it's a serious problem at the end of the day. There's been a very small, minute percentage of Muslims who have publicly spoken out against the atrocities of the jihadists. And you'll never see, we know, a demonstration. We'll never see in the West a large gathering of Islamic people to vocally, strongly speak out against a particular terrorist attack that has occurred, or any acts of depraved terrorism that, you know, the faithful followers of Muhammad are perpetrating on a daily basis. So that's why I agree, and I think we all do, that the whole thing of a moderate Muslim is just an erroneous term.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, Poppy has brought up quite a good point in the chat room about the allowing Muslims into the EDL. And I was thinking about this only this evening. And on the one hand, you might say, well, the EDL is an inclusive organisation. Why should we discriminate against Muslims on the face of it? But at the end of the day, the core mission of the EDL, or one of the core missions, if you analyse the mission statement, is that we are opposed to the increasing Islamisation of our country. Now, if you are a true Muslim, or a Muslim in any sense of the word, you would welcome the Islamisation of any country that you happen to be in, because that is your goal as a Muslim, to contribute to the advancement of Islam in any small way that you can. Whereas the EDL is opposed to that. So it does beg the question, if you self-identify as a Muslim, why would you want to join the EDL, even if you've got a Muslim division? Now, I don't pretend I have the answer to this question at the moment. Somebody in the official ranks of the EDL might want to reiterate their position on it. All I'm saying is, if I were a devout Muslim, or even a cultural Muslim myself, I'm not sure that I would see the point of joining an organisation that was against the advancement of Islam when my culture or my religion or my ideology was telling me quite the opposite. But
I was going to say,
Frank,
I was wondering with your view of what we've just been discussing there, how do you feel about that, what we've just been discussing?
Oh, there's loads of stuff. I mean, why would... All right, a bloke tells you he's a non-practicing Muslim. So what? I'm a non-practicing Muslim. I'm an anti-Muslim, but I still get it rammed down my throat. So if he's trying to pretend he don't know what's going on, then he's full of it. That's the first thing. He's just keeping his options open, and he's going to go for the winning side. There's plenty of them about. He's getting all the perks still. Oh, and he likes a pint as well. Big deal. I'm not impressed. And I remember a couple of weeks ago when I said, an Islamist will kill you, a Muslim merely stand back and applaud. And I tell you, a moderate Muslim always seems to be looking the other way when it happens. So, rude words to her. End of story.
This is what I'm saying. This is why we like to have a panel, because we've all got different views on this topic that we're talking about tonight, and that's why we got a panel. You guys, if you want to call in, if what we're talking about, you want to call in and talk to Frank, you want to talk to Tim or Mr. Michael Green or myself, please do. The number to call in, if you're a Skype user and you're a Blog Talk Radio user, if you left click on the Skype, follow the prompt, and when it says, do you want to speak to the host or do you want to listen, you'll press 1 on your device. If not, and you're outside the USA, the number to call in is 001-858-777-5934. Repeat, 001-858-777-5934. Please do. Please call in. That's what we're here for, and we love to take your calls. But there's something... But guys, this is just a little bit different. If you don't mind, just for a second, I just want to talk about a cafe. I know this is a little bit different than what we've been discussing, but I've got to give a shout out from some very, very good people who runs a little cafe where I've near the doctor's surgery, where I go sometimes to have some things sorted out, guys. There's a scout hut there, and there's disabled people and handicapped people who run this little cafe, and this is called Cafe 66. And I did say I was so impressed with these people, who are disabled and handicapped, running a cafe and running it very well. I've been so impressed that I spoke to Calabas. I thought, next time when we've got a better time, I want to speak. I want to give a shout out to these people who do some really good works. God bless them all, guys. You know what I mean? It's I was so impressed with seeing handicapped people have given the chance to being able to do, you know, in the workplace and doing what they do. So they do a fantastic job. So, yeah, sorry, guys, we're going up a little bit, but I thought I've got to get at it because I've got to give a mention because it's been on my mind a bit. So there you go. So I'll give a bit of a shout-out to Cafe 66. Great people. And guess what, guys? They do a great bacon sarnie as well.
Well, anyone who does a great bacon sarnie is all right in my book, Jeff.
There you go. I hope you didn't mind me interjecting and talking about that, guys. I know we was getting a bit deep into some of the other topics, but I just needed to. I had a bit of a heads up from dear Kel, so thank you so much, Kel.
Yeah, you've got
who's
everybody.
Who's that? I fancy a bacon sarnie now. Someone's our fancy bacon right now. In the chat.
You've got everybody thinking about bacon now. That's fatal. They're all going to want to go off and cook themselves some bacon. Bacon's one of those who just got to do it, you know. You think about it, you just got to cook it.
Yeah,
I'd like to respond to what Frank said.
I mean, going back to what we were talking about a few moments ago, and Kel reiterated the question in the chat room, given that the EDL is so virulently, and quite rightly, I might add, against Sharia and the Islamization of our country, and not only our country, but all other countries in the West, given that, what is the justification for having a Muslim division within the EDL? And I did say earlier, that's really something that maybe ought to be put back to the senior membership of the EDL, because I don't want to sort of ride roughshod over them with my reply. But it does beg the question that somebody who self-identifies as a Muslim and who should therefore be looking to promote Islam in whatever small way they can during the course of their working life or during the course of their social life or whenever they interact with other people or have an opportunity to advance Islam in whatever small way, they are duty-bound as Muslims to do it. And if you're not doing it and you're making a conscious effort not to do it, then in all honesty, you should not be a Muslim. You should apostatize and become an ex-Muslim. And there is the question which you should ask people if they say, well, of course, I'm against Sharia law, and if you say to somebody who self-identifies as a Muslim, are you in support or are you against Sharia law? And they say, I'm against Sharia law. You've really got to turn it back on them whenever you have the opportunity and say, well, why are you still a Muslim? Because as a Muslim, you are duty-bound to promote Sharia law.
Because
and if you're not
it's a part of their ideology. Sharia law is such an important part.
If they cannot promote it, if they publicly say that they cannot promote it, then they ought to do the honest thing and say, well, actually, I'm an ex-Muslim. I might have been a Muslim at one time, but now I'm an ex-Muslim. If they were honest. Now I appreciate that honesty is a wonderful thing when you're sitting here in a relatively peaceful country like ours. But there are places where if you were a Muslim and then you said you were an ex-Muslim, your very life, the lives of your family, might well be in danger. So I suppose you have to cut people a little bit of slack when you're talking to them to take account of their specific circumstances. But you should never forget yourself that what we are fighting is something that's so pervasive that anybody who continues to identify themselves either as a cultural Muslim or as a devout religious Muslim is potentially a real physical danger to you when jihad comes to your street. And you might think, well, it'll never come to my street. But there are people throughout history who probably thought that and then were taken by surprise when events overtook them. And because they didn't realize exactly what they were dealing with, they came and their families came very much worse off, to the point where many people lost their lives. And now I would only say to people who are in the EDL and people who are listening to the radio tonight is that you could knock this topic back and forth as much as you like, but at the end of the day, if somebody identifies as a Muslim, you've got to be extremely cautious when you're dealing with them. And if they say they don't support Sharia law, or if, like, Mo Ansar stood up in that meeting with the members of the EDL Defence League on that programme when Tommy met Mo, and he said, I've been supporting gay rights for 15 years, Islam isn't out for world domination or to take over the country. He was just lying. He was being a good Muslim. He was lying his little Muslim head off. He was lying his head off. And anybody who says otherwise is sadly mistaken and deluded if they believe anything other than what I have just said.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I think, Tim, what you're referring to is called the Dawah. Of course, we know this. The Dawah is the proselytization.
Taqiyyah,
right. Well, the Dawah.
I take your point. Yeah.
The Dawah is the spread of Islam, and the Dawah is of the utmost importance. The Sharia, as Frank appropriately said, mandates that all faithful followers of Islam, that they spread Islam, and they do it, it's an Arabic word, it's called Dawah. That's very aggressive proselytizing. I'm sure you gentlemen have all seen that in the streets of the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, now they're out there and they have their tables. You know, I've seen that in America, but they're not as in the streets of America yet doing their dawah. They're more busy in the prisons getting, you know, murderers, convicted felons, and rapists. They make good followers of Islam.
It's people of their own like-minded people, you mean?
They
scrape up the dregs for like-minded people.
They are trying. They do it in Birmingham. I have seen them. They stand at their tables in the high streets, and they actively proselytize. They try to get people interested in Islam. But woe betide you if you go up to them and start asking awkward questions. You will.
They get very violent, don't they, Tim?
Well,
very
it has
violent.
Been known. Has been known, especially if they are standing in a high street in, say, somewhere like Sparkbrook or Sparkhill, Moseley, Alum Rock, in Birmingham. There are many districts where if you were to approach a table occupied by two or three Muslims in the act of proselytization, in the act of dawah, and you attempted to question them at all, with questions that showed you actually had some knowledge of your subject matter, you would very quickly become the centre of attention of a large number of Muslim supporters, and you might well have to be rescued by the local police. All I'm saying that is very true.
I thought Islam was peaceful. What happened?
Oh, no, oh, yeah.
Well, Michael, it's the illusion. It's the illusion that they want to put across, but, you know, it's like anything. Most of us now have wisened up to this this charade that they've been trying to depict, that Islam is a religion of peace. As we all know, peace in Islam is something totally different as Tim was talking about the other day. Am I correct, Tim?
Well,
isn't it?
You're talking about lots of different concepts in Islam, not just peace. Those concepts are have a totally different meaning in the set of Islamic values compared to ours. Peace is one. Peace for us means living in harmony with your neighbour, accepting that there are some differences maybe between you, but being tolerant and not causing a problem in the interest of all getting along together. I think most people would agree that's a reasonable description of peace as we understand it. Doesn't mean anything like that with Islamic values. Peace comes when all opposition has been ruthlessly crushed and Islam rules the entire planet. That's what the goal of peace is in Islam, and nothing less will do. And the two concepts couldn't be more widely separated. That's just peace. There are other concepts which I could talk length about, like tolerance, like justice, like oppression, but I won't go into those now, only to say that if you happen to be discussing some of these topics in an abstract manner with a Muslim colleague, for example, assuming he's open-minded enough to discuss them with you in the first place, you have to be aware that what he's talking about could be diametrically opposed to what you're talking about. But that's a subject for another.
Yes, very good point. Thank you, Tim, for clarifying some of the issues
Tim,
that we've been discussing.
Tim, I think I've got it.
I was going to say we've got another caller, Michael, and I say she's a great caller. So I was going to say, if we can add a very own Red Fox blogger, Kel, to our panel. This is a few things that she wants to talk about as well this evening. So with that, I'm going to bring on our very own Red Fox blogger, Kel. Kel, welcome to the show. Good to have you on the show this evening.
Thank you, Jeff. And hello, Tim. And hello, hi,
Kel.
Mike. And I believe that's Frank that is also
yes.
there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, good evening, Kel. Evening,
good
Kel.
Evening, Frank. I brought up a question in the chat room about what is a moderate Muslim, and you gentlemen are handily dealing with that. That's for Tim.
You know what I'm laughing about. It's a little private joke.
But one question that is always arising is that the English Defense League is inclusive in that everybody is welcome. However, there is a burning question. How the English Defense League is fighting Sharia as well. That is the whole premise of Islam, is the Sharia. Mm. We see the Sharia all the time in the West. And how can the EDL rectify allowing Muslims, practicing Muslims, within the English Defense League?
How could it rectify it? Oh, do you mean how
reconcile.
Can it...
Reconcile,
I think, is what you mean. It's, is that what you mean, rather than rectify? Sorry,
well,
Kel.
Well, they rectified that they would have, it would be all-inclusive. So I suppose if you want to, if I change my sentence around, I suppose I could rephrase and say, how can they be satisfied and reconcile having practicing Muslims within the English Defense League, if that's a little more of a clarification.
Well, yeah,
I mean, to say,
really
if you don't mind, if I could just interject just for a sec. I mean, Kel, you know, the thing about it is, right from the off, we've always said that anybody, it doesn't matter if you heard Tommy Robinson on a couple of shows, if they're Muslims and want to join the EDL, would that be okay? And Tommy said, of course. And that is the way that it's always been. As long as they go along with the mission statement and everything we do, yes, we are an all-inclusive. I do know that to people, there's question marks with people, can it work with it being that way? But if they adhere to our mission statement and they believe in our mission statement, why shouldn't they be included? Even though they might be practicing, maybe they're not quite as practicing Muslims as, you know, the some of the hardcore are. But that's my personal opinion. And don't forget, this question has been asked for many years now. And that's the case where it's always been said, that the EDL is an all-exclusive organisation. And it always has been, right from the off.
I suppose what I meant is that when I used the term rectify is that I meant that they were trying to put a few things correct, and that they were, when the EDL initially started out, it was anti-Islamic, and they were trying to rectify that mistake by allowing Muslims to join the EDL, and Tim
no,
brought
we've
up the perfect
had
word in that.
He's a Muslim. So go ahead, Frank.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, we say.
You still there, Frank?
I'm not against Muslims. We're against Islam. Now, I don't know. We all know there's no difference. If you are Muslim, that's it. You're for Islam. But Abdul, for instance, he brought quite a few of his friends down from Scotland. All Muslims, and they had their own little thing. And they came to our demo. They was in our demo at the 9/11 one. Do you know when they let Chowdhury speak and pushed us round the corner?
That's
well,
right.
Well, he was round the corner with us, and there's half a dozen dishing out these leaflets to us. And I couldn't see what he was getting at. You know, it's like going to the Ku Klux Klan and asking them to join the blooming black and white minstrel show. I just don't understand. But it's not a case of when we say we're open, we've got to be open. If you want to come in and have a look at us, we've got nothing to be ashamed of. Now, if you want to join us, that's up to you. That's down to your conscience. That's what we're all about, freedom of conscience. If you want to join us. Now, what would have happened if I'd have gone round a corner with a load of EDL leaflets? Have a guess.
I think you very good point there, Frank. And that's what I'm saying, you know, because it does put a question, and there's a lot of people, ask the questions, and it's only right that we try to supply the answers. And we've all said it, that we are an all-inclusive organisation. We always have been, right from the off, we've always said that. Right. That's what's made us so different than anything else out there. Would you not say, Frank? That is the case. That is the reason why we've become
Kel?
So popular.
What do you reckon, Kel? Was that a fair enough answer?
I thought it was very fair. I'm going to hold my strong stance, though, that when we're getting back to full circle here, and I'll just say that there is absolutely no such thing as a moderate Muslim.
Well, just one that's looking the other way when all the atrocities are happening. A moderate Muslim seems to be the only one in the world who don't know what's going on in Islam and don't know anything about the Quran. So why he's calling himself a Muslim is just for the perks. He's not a very reliable companion.
Do you want my opinion, Frank?
Pardon?
I think the ideology of a moderate Muslim is a Western construct, and that is hopeful thinking.
That's a very good way of thinking about that. That is bang on. I don't know whether the rest of the panel agrees with that.
Well, I do actually. I agree with Kel on that. And you could take it a bit further and say that the concept of radical Islam or fundamentalist Islam is a Western construct, and there is no such thing. If you look at all the ways in which spokespeople in the West try to explain away Islamic terrorism, they'll say, "Oh, it's all down to radical Islam. It's down to fundamentalist Islam. It's down to Islamism." All these various adverbs and adjectives that they try to apply. Muslims don't look at it that way at all. They just say, and I'm quoting the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan on this, Islam is Islam and that's it. There is no moderate Islam, there's no radical Islam, there's no fundamentalist Islam. Islam is Islam and that is it. And I think
and
if
the only
we
answer to that is
it,
Islam is Islam and we've had enough.
Well, I think
I agree, and that's the reason why the EDL, you know, we put up with so much for so many years, and people was too well. The way that political correctness is, people was scared to raise their voices and speak about this cult of Islam in case they, you know, had a lot of, you know, brought a wrath down upon themselves. But now it's we've really opened it up where people. You know, I can have conversations, or when I'm out and about, and probably the same as you, Frank and Tim, we're having these conversations, and we're not getting like the people saying talking about Muslim very quietly. Now they're quite openly talking about what the problems they're all about, and that's what I know. It's the last few weeks that I've been out about, the way people have been more open towards me. And when I say, like, we, you know, hosting the road, really, oh, we hear a lot about the show. It does great work. Yeah. And think, you know, so it's amazing the way that people's, the whole thoughts of these, the problems that we've had, now people are talking about it openly. And thank goodness that we've managed to raise awareness with people and open people's eyes, and they're starting to speak out. And that is all we've ever asked, isn't it, Tim? And
well, I certainly agree with what Jeff is saying there, that before the EDL came along, it was very difficult to discuss Islam in public without being called a racist, an Islamophobe, a bigot, or any one of these other hateful names. And the EDL has gone a long way to making discussion of Islam that much more acceptable. That has to be a good thing. So if you can talk about Islam now, so much the better. But I still think we would all be better off if we looked at the truth of the matter. And when I say we, I'm talking about the mainstream media and the governments and everybody else who's in authority who ought to know better. When they start discussing moderate Muslims versus radical Muslims and so on, we should say, there are only Muslims, and they share certain characteristics, one of which includes an obligation to advance Islam in whatever way they possibly can. And when you're talking about Islam, there is no moderate Islam, there's no radical Islam, there is just Islam, and that's it. And if we could go even further, my own personal preference would be to say, let's really tell the truth. Now, that would be novel, and say Islam is not actually a religion at all. First and foremost, primarily, its primary characteristic is that of a political totalitarian ideology, not a religion. Yes. It has religious overtones.
And it's masqueraded as a religion.
I think that's
where we like to put it.
Primarily, if we were to reclassify it as a political totalitarian ideology, because that is what it is, a lot of things would fall into place and we would be able to deal with it in a much more sensible way instead of tiptoeing around the edges, trying not to offend everybody because we don't want to upset somebody by criticizing their religion. Let's just say, it's not a religion. It's a political totalitarian ideology. It should be treated as such. And the fact that it's got religious overtones should be neither here nor there. We should treat it in the same way that we treated the Nazi ideology of 60 or 70 years ago and fight it tooth and nail until it is completely and utterly crushed. Now, that's going to take a bit of a sea change in the thinking of most people, because most people have been brought up to believe right from a very early age that Islam is one of the world's great religions, and you can't just slag off the religion of 1.5 billion mainly peaceful people. Well, I say, yes, you can, because if you classify it as an ideology and you recognise that ideologies are in some instances threats to our own national security, then you can take those steps. But it's a sea change which not everybody is going to accept straight away. But my view is, if we all told the truth about Islam, a lot of things would fall into place that people have so much difficulty dealing with and thinking about at the moment. And that's my two cents on the matter.
As I say, I support your views there as well, Tim, and I think most of us do who sit on the panel this evening. But what I'm going to do now, I'm going to do a roll call, because I just noticed the time. I'm meant to do it at the top of the hour, Tim and Frank and Michael and Kel. So if you bear with me, guys, while I run down, I'm not going to play a trumpet.
Thank
you, Kel.
I've only come on here to listen to your trumpet.
Sit up straight, everybody. Have those buttons brushed. Come on. Have those shoes shined. Roll call.
There you go. okay, well, we got myself, East Anglia's EDL Radio, Jeff, No Surrender EDL. We've got British News, my old mate Army. Good to see you, Army, and good bless you being here. We've got Kath in the chat room this evening. Always good to see you, Kath. Of course, we got Tim, Cat Strangler 101, who's part of the panel this evening.
Meow.
We can't resist it, Tim. You know that.
go on. I'll let you off.
There you go. And, of course, we've got Darren Wald. It's always a pleasure to see you, Darren, in the chat room, as usual. And, of course, we've got Eric Carl, who always puts great stuff into the chat room. Always follow what you put in there, Eric. So thank you. And, of course, we've got
a meow in there
right great.
Now. I was just saying, I can see he's put a meow in there right now. So there you go. Carry on, Jeff. Don't mind me.
We've got Fidge. It's FDGO, Fidge. Well, it's good to see you in the chat room. It's a pretty strange nick, but it's a good one, though. And, of course, we got, and as I say, part of the panel this evening as well, we got Frank at EDL. It's always a pleasure to see you, Frank, and always contribute well to the show as well. We've got numerous guests. We've got a few guests there, and I'd like to give you all a wave. Thank you for being here this evening. And, of course, we've got, my page has gone funny there. We've got our very own Hold Your Awakens with his own great shows and his great blog. So once again, hold it. It was a pleasure to see you. And we got Lady Michelle. It's always a pleasure to see you in the chat room, Lady Michelle. And we've got Moving Forward, who sometimes contributes to the show. He calls in, and it's always great to take his call. And not forgetting Sue from New Mexico, who always listens into the show. So thank you so much, Sue, for all the great work you do as well. So I've missed anybody. Apologies, because I've gone right down the list.
Oh, that's okay. I can pick it up from here, because your page did go funny, and you lost the bottom part of the roll call. But we've also got Nick, who is joining us, and we've got our very own Poppy from across the sea from me, which I always regret, because I would love to sit in her kitchen and have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And we've got Richard Millington, who joined us, Spikus, and Vito Esposito, no Sharia ever.
Shall we take that Richard Millington's name? He hasn't done it for a little while.
You'd like a cup of tea, then, Michelle. You'd like a cup of tea, then,
Michelle. I'd like to thank you, as I say, because I couldn't see, because my page went funny at the time. So I got to thank you for doing the remainder of the who's in the chat room, Kel. So thank you so much for that. And, of course, for everybody being in chat room this evening, not forgetting our great listening audience out there. So we've been discussing some really interesting topics this evening. That's why we love having a panel, so that we can discuss them, and some great questions coming in from the chat room as well. So there you go. We have roll calls. I think that... it went very well, didn't it, guys? So everybody's present accounting for, so there you go. And, of course, not forgetting, tomorrow we have a demonstration, yes, in Exeter. So my thoughts go out to all their boys and girls who's travelling from different parts of the country. And I should be in touch with Tommy and a few others while they're taking part in demonstration, just to see day.
I'm sorry, I'm totally interjecting here. We are really lousy at roll call because we forgot Spikes.
Spikes?
Oh yeah, he sounds miffed. He does. He sounds miffed. What am I?
He should be. I mean, all these people go out of their way to visit the program, and we're forgetting our loyal listeners. I feel really bad.
Yeah, that's right.
Spikes.
Gotta remember your manners.
It's a pleasure to have you here, sir. No, thank you, because my page is all of a sudden, I was just following it down, and then it stopped, and Kel, your page is probably more refreshed than mine. That's the reason why you see the rest. So to everybody,
no,
thank
you
so much.
The same thing happened to mine, Jeff, just at the same time that it happened to yours. I couldn't see further down the page either, and then it jumped, and I got it back. So I had the same problem that you did. It's not just you.
Yeah,
I have a question for Tim and Jeff.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Are you gentlemen familiar with this horrific story in the UK? A two-month-old female infant had female genital mutilation performed on her.
I saw a reference to it in the chat room, but I haven't read the article.
Not to read the whole article, but everybody here tonight knows the just depraved evil. It's a sadistic act performed on young Muslim girls. But the idea that this was done on a two-month-old little baby infant girl, it just makes one enraged. It really enrages me. There are so many things that these people do that are barbaric, but this stands out in a class by itself. And
I would agree with what you say there, Michael. The act of what these people do, the depravity of doing that to an infant, a little baby, it goes beyond their comprehension. And all it does is really angers that this so backward culture theirs allows this thing to be done. And it just goes to show you how backward these people are in their thinking, and that we could never, how can we ever sort of be aware of these cultural things that they do, where it's so, so wrong in our eyes, in a, you know, a Western civilized world, that this is, you know, it's barbaric, isn't it, guys? There's no doubt about it. Our listeners out there, I don't know what you people might think about this. You know, a two-month-year-old baby, the parents have been arrested for this absolutely barbaric.
Well,
it's supposedly going to be the first. There's never been a case prosecuted in the UK.
No, this is it. It's the first one at last.
Yeah.
What was it we were saying the other week? There's 64,000 happening a year and no arrests at last.
Well, it seems Frank, the authorities in England have been aware of this, but they've done nothing to take it on. And it seems they've done nothing to really try to prosecute the people that perpetrate this barbarity. It's just astounding to me.
What's happening? Something else that's happening, I'll have to look it up. I'll try and send it to you Sunday when I find the link again. But there's a petition about protect whistleblowers. And there's something I caught in the news the other day. It's going to be an offence. If you know of child abuse and you don't report it, it's going to be offence not to. So, at the moment, there's people in the stuck between a rock and an hard place. If you don't report it and it gets found out later that you knew, you're nicked. But at the moment, without being protection from whistleblowers, if you do report it, you could get sacked. So it's a bit of a state we're all in at the moment. But,
I was just looking at that story online. You know the story that we've just been talking about, Frank? And it says, this was a Mail Online, Met Police arrest two over genital mutilation of a baby girl. And this just grabbed me, who was only around 5 weeks old. 5 weeks old, not 2 months, 5 weeks old.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't matter what time, does it? It's...
Who's
going to volunteer?
I don't know what you
anyway.
Think about that. Your views on this horrific thing that these people do, Kel.
I posted this in my blog, and it got over 200 hits within 24 hours. Yeah. And in that blog, I also included a video about female genital mutilation in the United Kingdom. And I did put a disclaimer that there is disturbing content within that video. But this article from the Daily Mail, it really ripped me. And I was actually, Poppy was bringing up really good points in the chat room. And she posted a brilliant article about how it's coming to Scotland as well. And what we used to see is that they would go on summer vacation. Hey, kids, we're going to Pakistan. And we knew what they were up to. They were taking their daughters to be a GM, you know.
And arranged marriages.
And that too, Frank, that too. What they're doing now, though, is that they're pulling their monies together, and they're importing these imams to perform the female genital mutilation within their own homes, within Britain and within Scotland. And they're doing it in the United States. You can count on it. It's a culture of secrecy. Nobody will talk about it.
Hmm.
Nice. I mean, that's what makes it so difficult to get the convictions, of course, because without corroborating evidence, I mean, unless you took a very draconian stance on it, such as compulsory examination at regular intervals from birth for every female child, how would you get the corroborating evidence? I think it's one of the things that's made it so difficult. It's one thing to bring
corroborating evidence. Excuse me. The corroborating evidence is in one of the several hundred cases a month or several thousand cases a year of little girls who get rushed into hospital with all sorts of nasty infections because it's been done in a kitchen with a broken bottle. And you start from there and you can go up right the way to the trial and you'll find doctors, dentists, all doing it for backhanders.
Yeah, well, okay, I'm playing devil's advocate here, Jeff, because obviously I think it's an appalling thing and it should be stamped out in whichever way you possibly could. However, the practicalities involved in stamping it out are a little more complex than you might think at first glance. The burden of proof in any case like this in British criminal justice is very high because you're not talking about a civil case, you're talking about criminal justice, and the burden of proof is much higher than it would be if it were just a civil case, for example. And getting all the evidence that you need in order to bring a conviction is going to be difficult at the best of times. And
The girl herself's the evidence.
Well, all right.
And the doctor, you might say...
You might say, all right, so the mother must have known about it. So then you slap the mother in jail. Then you've got something to follow up on. If you can
get the petitioner in jail and then that saved loads. If you slap the mother in jail, it's too late. You get who did it, bang them up, and that's another 50 or 100 or whatever won't happen again.
Well, let's just know that with this case that's been brought to the surface like this, which we know that there's been many, many thousands of these cases. We've been talking about this for years, haven't we? Now we're seeing one of the cases come to the surface and actually people are being arrested for it. Hopefully it'll open the floodgates and there'll be a lot more of that. It's just so tragic that a little infant has got to go through this before they decide to really clamp down, find out what's going on. Don't matter what the cost to do it, just do it because it's so wrong. And I think it's all a matter of resources. Most of us are in that way. It's got to be done. It's where you put your resources.
And at the moment, the legal system finds it much more economical to train dogs to walk around stations and up and down high streets and bus stops and nick people with a joint in their pocket. It brings in more money. It's more economical.
I think you're a good point. Yeah, it's got the values wrong. That's what he's trying to say, Frank.
I think it certainly needs. If you really wanted to be serious about tackling the problem, I think you'd have to go at it from a much more draconian point of view than we currently do. At the moment, we're trying very hard not to step on cultural sensitivities, and I'm not advocating that we should put cultural sensitivities at top priority. Quite the reverse. If I were to be asked for what sort of suggestions to make, I'd say, well, let's start by compulsory regular examination of every female child. You probably have to do it for every female child, so that's going to be, there'll be invasion of privacy issues.
That's my point, Jeff, you'd be looking at
human rights issues right from the start, so you'd have a big barrier to overcome there. I'm not saying that we shouldn't try to overcome it, but I'm saying that barrier would be there. Then you could say, if it was subsequently found that the child had had the operation done and that nobody had flagged it up, you could start by coming down very heavily on everybody who was likely to have been involved until somebody cracks and gives up the name of the person who performed the operation. But then you're talking about a total reversal of the British justice principles that underpin our criminal justice system in the first place, and it raises far more issues.
This is going to be a very difficult thing to sort out, but I think that now we're seeing these cases more coming to light and actually, you know, court appearances. Maybe it just gives the law a chance to work and to even tighten up and to be able to do something, because it needs to be done right now, not tomorrow, not in the future, but it needs to be done now. It needs to be done yesterday, didn't it? You know, what's been going on? It's disgraceful. Would you not say,
well,
Jeff?
Jeff, go ahead, Michael. Yeah, here's my perspective as an American, okay? I see here that the British authorities, members of Parliament, whoever, people within the system, let's say, have known about this. I believe these people are scumbags because they're cowards, they're politically correct, they're multiculturalist, people, and they probably think, well, this is a cultural aspect of Islam, of the Islamic community, and, you know, we don't want to offend anybody, we don't want to rock the boat. I believe that they have known about it. I think there's evidence that they have. I absolutely think that they could have taken the appropriate measures to institute some type of legislative laws to deal with this. They could have become more aggressive. They could have instituted a special department of the police force or whatnot to investigate this, and they haven't done anything about it due to that fact. And it seems to be that it's most egregious, much more in the UK than it is in America. As you know, we are a number of years behind you in the extreme state of Islam. So I don't think that any pass or any slack should be cut to British politicians and people in the British court system or the British police or whomever. I think that they are a bunch of despicable people to have permitted this to go on as long as it has.
Yeah, I agree entirely with you, Michael, and I think it comes back to what I was saying on an earlier show, is that our entire parliamentary democracy system and everything associated with it is geared for short-term results. So politicians feel, on a number of instances, in a number of cases, not just this one, but in issues to do with parliamentary democracy generally, if they can just keep the lid on it for a few more years so they can retire with their gold-plated pensions to their island in the Caribbean, in the sunshine, in their gated community, then they don't have to worry about it. And that is definitely part of the problem. If we were really concerned about the long-term benefits for humanity, then we would not be putting cultural sensitivities at the top of the list at all. And I'm certainly, if I had anything to do with it, cultural sensitivities would be right at the bottom of the list, and anybody who complained would just have to sit there and take it, because I think that the health and well-being of the female half of the population that we have encouraged to come and live in our country, why should they put up with practices such as this just because we are too afraid of offending cultural sensitivities? And the answer is, they shouldn't have to put up with it. We should be a lot more robust, and if it means taking draconian action, which is going to be seen as discriminatory without a doubt, as I have said in the past, we are going to be seen as discriminatory if we take some of these steps, but discriminatory is what we need if we're going to solve a lot of the problems. And we have to get our minds around
I would agree with everything you said in that statement that you said there, Tim. But what I've got to do now is we've got to start wrapping the show up. As I say, I've just noticed the time. As usual, guys, we've covered so many, and maybe, you know, on this Sunday show we can maybe recover some of the things that we've been discussing tonight, because these are so important issues that we're discussing. And you know, what's happened to that little girl, and so many cases, 64,000 other cases. We need to highlight it. That's the reason what we've been doing for so many years. I mean, how many times have we heard these statements being read out of so many cases here, so many cases, and it's been going on, and we have been keeping the pressure, and that's what we will continue to do. You know, when these cases, you know, come to light, and we will highlight them, and we will go to these places, we will highlight these issues. That's what the EDL is all about. That's what we are. We're a human rights organisation, a pressure group, and that is what we will continue to do. But I've got to thank you all tonight for calling. So, Mr. Michael Green, it's always a pleasure to take your call. Thank you for being a part of the panel. Tim, Cat Strangler 101, one of the panel and co. It's a pleasure to take your call this evening. We've got, of course, Kel as a part of the panel. She called in a little bit later, but it was great, Kel. Some great comments she was making in the chat room and keeping up to speed with some of the other things that was going on. Thank you so much. And have I missed anybody? And thanks, Sue. Oh, my goodness me, I've just noticed we've got 90 seconds left. Once again, guys, thank you all so much. And we'll be back again this Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back again this Sunday. We'll probably have a little bit of a debriefing about what happened in Exeter. I know we're looking forward to hearing how everything went. So for myself and from the rest of the team here and all associated with the show, take care, stay safe, God bless you all. And not forgetting. Come on, guys, all together now. We've got 60 seconds. No surrender.
No surrender.
No surrender.
Ever.
Ever.
Never.
Never.
Love you, Jeff.
People might say my life is in a rut. I'm quite happy with what I got. People might say that I should strive for more. But I'm so happy. I got to the point. Things happening here.
Go, and we are into archives.
Yep, I'm still here. Anybody else in?
Yeah,
I am here.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
I think we got Frank.
Yeah,
and
I'm hanging
Kel
around.
Still. Yeah, Kel.
Hey, Kel, how are you doing?
Well, there you go. I mean, my goodness me, guys. We covered so many things on this show tonight. It's just amazing. And we seem to do this all the time now these days. You know, you notice that, Tim, the way that we do expand on things. And I think it just makes it so interesting for our listeners as well.
Well,
you know,
we do, and I think it's quite helpful to sort of pick one or two of these topics and expand on them. them in ways which where we can involve some more of the listeners. So we get Michael and Kel and one or two other people chiming in as well, Frank and so on. And I think it makes for a great show as long as we're all respectful of each other and try not to talk over each other too much. That's a difficult one. Given the nature of Blog Talk Radio, it can be a little bit difficult, and you do end up talking over the other person sometimes. But as long as everybody's fairly respectful, I think it works very well.
That's okay, though. It's citizen journalism, and that's what we do. I mean, we do what maybe we do that, but we have some great voices on Blog Talk Radio, and I just want to, first of all, before I get into what I want to say, is that Michael Green is such a great asset to the panel.
Mm.
But I was listening to Tom Trento the other day, and he gave a shout-out for Blog Talk Radio, and saying that he was very, very proud that Blog Talk Radio allows the voices of citizen journalism to speak, and I have been saying this for the longest time, that this is where you get the real truths, and he has availed himself, rather, to be a guest on any Blog Talk Radio show where the voices are getting out there. And I was thrilled that Tom Trento shared that. And Tom Trento has been a guest on the Red Fox Blogger in the past.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Is he from Florida?
What's that, Frank?
Are you going to invite him?
Yes, he's from Florida.
Yes, I'm aware of who he is. He's he does great work in the anti-jihad movement.
He certainly does. Michael.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember Tom Trento from back in 2007. When I was first getting interested in the counter-jihad movement, he was one of the names I came across, and I emailed him and I said I'd like to get more involved, and he says, yeah, sure. He says, I'm going to be in Milan next week in Italy. Why don't you come and meet me? He's the kind of guy sort of jets around all over
the
globe.
Tim.
Yeah, and I wasn't in a position to do that, and I said I can't do that, but we'll have to sort of meet up at some point. And I never followed it up, but since then I have watched his career and with great interest, as they say, he's gone from strength to strength in the things that he's done, always keeping one step
man
ahead
of the
everybody.
People, as I always look at Tom.
He's
expanded in so
me,
many ways in the counter-jihad.
Could I ask one of you please to link that for me? Because I've never heard of this gent, and I want to catch up.
Oh, Kel, you've got something.
Oh, Frank, I can do that right now. You're still in the chat
Thank
room,
you,
right? So what I'll
Thank
do
you,
is that I will go to his YouTube page right now, and I'll put the link for his shows in there for you right now.
Thanks very much.
Thank
yeah,
you,
well,
Kel.
Please carry on, Jets, but I didn't want to miss that.
I was just going to say, I mean, he's gone a long way with getting various video clips. I mean, I know he's been involved with Blog Talk Radio, and he's been on Kel's show at least once in the past, and I think she was talking about having him on again. No, that was only just recently, I think. Anyway,
yeah,
the point
he was
is
a little while ago, wasn't he?
He's got Trento Vision, he's got the Blog Talk Radio, he's got various video clips posted on his website and in various other places on the internet, and he's really setting the standard in terms of getting the message out there, and I think he's a great guy to have. He's fluent in artistic, and he's just the sort of guy that we could all, I'm sure, take tips from him in the way that he presents his subject matter and discusses it, and the kind of people that he talks to, the perspectives that he gains through talking to people. It's all great stuff. So
saying. With people like Tom Trento and many others in the anti-jihad this moment, there's so many great people out there that's doing the great works, and you've got to give a big salute to everybody, because, as we know, you're up against all the political correctness arena. What's that in the background up in here?
Not your
parrot
news again, is it?
Hold on a minute.
I thought I was a parrot reading the news again, Jeff.
No, that
wasn't the call to prayer. Was that the call to prayer?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got frightened. I got scared there. What happened?
Kel
sent me that link, and I clicked onto it. I didn't realize there was a video, and it started all on its own. But anyway, I'll put it in favorites now. I'll go back to it later.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, so thank you, Kel, for putting the link in for Frank.
Yes, Kel.
Tim, a question for Tim and Jeff. Anyone on the panel?
Yeah,
how many mosques are in the UK, in England, approximately? Do you know the number of mosques?
Well, it's going to be a couple of thousand, I would have thought. I don't think I've got the exact figure, but it's about a couple of thousand.
Okay.
That's the official ones.
Well, that's a massive amount.
That's true.
That's massive, because in the United States, there's over 2,000 mosques in the U.S., but, of course, we're a giant landmass. And the U.K., England's a much smaller country, so if there are that many...
What you find, Michael, is that, especially in towns where there are a lot of Muslims, is that Muslims who may purchase an ordinary residential property and designate it as a mosque. I think you have to apply to the council to have the designation given to you. But if you're in a town like Bradford, for example, getting that kind of, or Blackburn, or one of the northern towns where there's a high percentage of Muslims, getting that designation to turn your residence into a mosque is actually not a problem. And of course, you can still use it as a house, and you can still live in it, but you don't have to pay council tax or anything like that. Because it's a mosque and designated as a religious place of worship, they get all sorts of privileges from it. So it's hardly surprising that you see them springing up. And I think in that total of 2,000, there are included a number of what effectively converted houses. And the conversion might only be that they designate one downstairs room as a mosque, and for all intents and purposes, they use the rest of the house to live in and don't pay council tax. So it's a bit of a scam.
And, of course, being protected, but with religious status. That's what I'm seeing. As I said before...
Which comes back to what you were saying earlier about changing the concept of Islam from being a religion to being a totalitarian political ideology. If that were reclassified, if the ideology were reclassified to reflect what it really is, we could take all sorts of sensible steps to deal with the problem that we're currently having so much trouble with, because people continue to look at it as being primarily a religion, when of course we all understand here that it's nothing of the sort.
And
a kind of funny story.
Until we got a political strength of character with politicians, we're going to just continue having to talk about this, put pressure on these politicians to actually change their stance on things, because, you know, otherwise we're going to be talking about these things that we've been discussing tonight, you know, for many years to come, until we see a new direction with the way that politicians maybe being more forthright and speaking out instead of being scared with this political
correctness. Well, not so much forthright. But just speaking the truth would be nice. Do you know, when I was younger, I remember hearing a story, and I think it was originated in a German folk tale. It was called The Emperor's New Clothes. And it was about... Right, you all know the story, right? But nobody wanted to speak the truth for fear of upsetting the emperor and his entourage. We're seeing very similar parallels here. Nobody wants to speak the truth for fear of upsetting cultural sensitivities, which, in my view, is just as bad, if not worse. And when we do finally regain the ability to speak the truth in the face of all this political correctness and multiculturalist nonsense that's been shoved down our throats for the past 40 years, I think we'll very suddenly see things improving. But to get that sea change, to get people to say, this is nonsense, the situation should be addressed in terms of what it really is rather than what we would like it to be. Until we get to that point, I think we're going to continue to have problems.
Yeah.
And I don't see...
Well,
I don't
we've just got to keep banging our drum. We've got to keep doing what we do.
We've just got to keep banging our drum, like you say, Jeff.
Keep the pressure up on these politicians.
If you remember, there's a happy ending to that.
There was a happy ending to that story.
Because out of the mouth of the babe... Yeah.
Well, there's no excuse for them not to know what's going on in this day and age with the internet and the Blog Talk radio shows and radio shows in general and the blogs in general. There's no excuse for our politicians not to know what's going on.
That's why that is such a direct analogy. That's why it's such a direct analogy. Everybody knows what's going on.
Frank.
Everybody was standing, cheering, watching the Emperor walk around, being carted along, stark naked. And some were frightened, the ones at the front were frightened to say anything. Otherwise, the Royal Guard would have had their heads off.
Yep.
I love that parable. Yes.
To say anything.
That's what I hope that we see. And I'm sorry, I'm interjecting because I'm getting a little animated here.
That's okay.
What Frank and Tim and what you guys are saying is so totally true. Is that we are seeing the Emperor now, and we are not the only. We're not the only little boy that's pointing out, hey, he has no clothes. We know that now, and the politicians, they have nowhere to hide anymore. The gloves are off.
They're
laid naked now, aren't they? Because, and everybody can see from what they really are. And that is, been trying to lie and deceive our great people for such a long time that people now have said, no, we're not putting up with this no more. Why should we? Why should we put up with this? That you're destroying our great nations with this stupidity and greed and corruption. It's wrong, and it has to be dealt with. In the near future, it's going to be after dealt with. These people will be held accountable. I've always said that, and I've always said that, and I do believe that they will be held accountable. It doesn't matter where they hide, where they run, but one day they will be held accountable. There will be trials for these people who betrayed the people of this country. maybe not in my lifetime, but... I can see that there will be that time. The times are changing. There is a wind of change. You can feel it. You know, we used to say that on the show, didn't we, Kel? But I still feel it. I still believe that.
Oh, yes.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I say, I keep referring to it, but that poll on Sunday Morning Live was a real eye-opener a few weeks ago, and I don't think even the BBC were expecting that result, and that is just one indicator.
The look on her face was priceless.
It certainly was priceless.
Yeah, Tim and Michael and Frank, Kel put the... There was a little thing, wasn't there, Kel? And
yeah.
It got on the top.
The slides.
And the shock look.
Yeah, I did cut and paste. I've got that on my files now. Bring that out every opportunity. It's so good.
We talked about it. We laughed, didn't we, Kel?
In all
it was hilarious, Jeff.
It really was.
It's past the watershed, so I can say this. But there's an expression in English that I never quite understood until I saw that picture, and it's she's got a face like a well slapped arse.
Yeah.
Oh, Frank.
Frank, love you.
Yeah,
I tell you what, mate, that was funny.
But I mean, in all seriousness, it's times like that when you realise just how much impact the EDL has had on public consciousness. You would never have got a poll like that 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm sure it's difficult to say entirely due to the EDL. I'd say it was largely due to the EDL that we've actually managed to turn the talking points around so that people, the general public, feel that we deserve a fair hearing, where the media and the government would prefer that we were just swept under the carpet. And that's why I'm sure pressure was brought to bear on Tommy and Kevin, as I have said in the past, and they thought that by getting rid of those two, the EDL would just dissolve. But they reckoned without the strength of feeling that the EDL has generated, not only in this country.
Yeah, I think it's backfired on them, and I think they're probably feeling the reverberations already.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's why I'm dragging my old bones out of bed tomorrow at 5 o'clock to catch that train.
God bless you, Frank.
It's not for fun.
God bless
it's
you,
duty.
Boy.
Frank, are you off to the? Are you off to Exeter tomorrow?
Yeah, dragging my old bones out at 5 o'clock tomorrow.
God bless. God bless and Godspeed, and get there safe
Frank,
and come home safe.
Frank is like Tommy. You know, he goes to most of them.
Yes,
you, Frank.
I know.
He's driving all over the place.
Frank, you get a good night's sleep, and we'll talk to you on. Hopefully, we'll talk to you on Facebook or wherever. But please have a successful rally, Frank. As always, it's such a great pleasure to speak with you.
And if anybody
call in Sunday, we can have a little bit of debriefing as well, like we normally do. It'd be great.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm going to stay up tonight and sleep on the train and hope I don't wake up in Plymouth.
There you go.
Frank, have a great one tomorrow. You know, I'm sure you will. You know, as I say, I know it's going to be a bit of a trek for you, like most of our cool people out there. But have a great demo, mate, and maybe you can give a bit of a feel of how things went. When you're home Sunday and you can call in on the show. Okay then, mate?
Oh, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, cheers, bud. Once again, I'd like to thank you for calling in tonight. I've been really enjoying having, you know, a panel like with Mr. Michael Green, and with Tim, with Kel, with yourself. It just, there was so many talking points. Yes, now and again We there's so many points we want to get over that we do jump in now and again, but this is just a thing. We're live radio, and these things are going to happen. We're not professional as such, are we? We're not sort of, you know, we've
got
people
going. No, we're not,
and
I'm glad we're not, because we weren't indoctrinated in journalism school. We are citizen journalists. That's what we do. We didn't go to fancy us. School, some fancy college. No, we're just the voices, and we convey the truth. That's what we do. And you won't find the truth in mainstream media, and that's why I'm so grateful to Blog Talk Radio. And John C. Sweet, if you're listening, yes, I still love you, John C. Sweet. But we have a voice here, and I'm thankful for Blog Talk Radio, in that you can sound as stumbling and you can mispronunciate words and everything else, but people get the message in the end. That's why I love this.
Yeah, me too, Kel. And, you know, sometimes we've had chat about after show, but it's just amazing how many people listen to the show and take everything on board that we say, enjoy the show, keep coming back, simply because it's a breath of fresh air. When they hear people like ourselves, who is not in a professional capacity, but, you know, fellow people are speaking about the things that's so important to the good people of our nation and our countries, that it does, it emboldens them. It makes them feel, yes, there is a voice. Yes, there, you know, we can do something. Yes, we can be more proactive, and I think that's what we've done over the years. We've made people more aware that they can do something. They don't have to be the silent majority. They can be a part of a great organisation like ourselves or other groups. You know, very similar to what we do. And that's all we've ever been trying to do right from the off. And we Kel, that's what we did right from the off. Is getting people to get more proactive in where they are. Most people got the same problems we got, whatever part of the world they live in. And if we can point them in the right direction now to do things, then hopefully we come together, and we have come together. We are a global organisation as such, with defence leagues all across the globe now.
And it does seem like we're doing all the right things, and hopefully we can making the changes. And as Tim said, it just goes to show you, 95% of the people it was polled would like to see us have a forum, would like to hear our views. So that is definitely a big change and something we must highlight. Hopefully there'll be another poll in the new future, which will be so...
Have you noticed what's happened since? Everybody wants to hear our views, but we've not been invited to air them, have we?
Well, that's quite true, Frank. I mean, I've quite apart from me being asked to give an interview to ABC News America, I think we are seeing a lot more interest in the EDL compared to before Tommy and Kev made their departure. People are definitely interested, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that we haven't been asked to express our views, because some of us certainly have. And I think if the more we get this message across, the more people are going to be coming to us. And I mean, young Tommy, he's got. I don't know how definite this is, but I believe he's being invited to speak on Michael Corrin's show. Now
that's right.
That comes off. That's a big deal. And
that is a big deal, and it's a big step. But because what he's done is basically he's I think what had happened is that Tommy Robinson actually had spoke to Michael Corrin about it, and I think he put Tommy up as being a part of the LBGT division, and that his views, because he spoke very well when he was down in Luton, and when Tommy met Mo, he done such a good thing there that I think that Tommy Robinson and others thought that he'd be great to push forward with maybe Michael Corrin's show. To make people aware that we're coming in all different shapes, sizes, different genders, this, that, and the other, and that's what we're all about. We're so inclusive, and I think that is a brilliant way to portray the EDL. And I don't know if you both all agree with me or not, but I think
I think at this stage of the development of the EDL and taking it forward from where we are at the moment, Jeff, all publicity is good publicity. And even if,
yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I expressed a few reservations when I was contacted by ABC News America about what they might do with the interview. And I spoke to Jeff at some length about it, and we said,
yes.
Well, I'm not going to give away any trade secrets, and I'm going to record the conversation, which I did. And if they do decide to use it against us, at least I'll be able to mount some sort of refutation. But at the moment, all publicity, in my view, for the EDL has got to be good. Even if people just say, oh, I've never heard of this EDL, what's it all about? But, I mean, I can't imagine
there's not that many people now that don't know what the EDL is now.
The EDL is quite likely to be a pretty much a household name well beyond the boundaries of this country. So,
well,
I
can tell the difference between now and when I started. Because
when I
first joined about 3 years ago, I used to go down the club and because I was full of it then, because I was just disgruntled. And I heard about, well, I went onto the EDL, found it browsing, and when I got into it and signed and got into the threads, you know what I mean, the posts, I really, it opened my eyes, all the different links, and I was going down the club telling people, and they would start to yawn and look the other way. But 3 years on, they're all going to vote UKIP. But I can't get any of them to join me at the demos, but, you know, they're all about my age. But, well,
yeah,
there's some younger.
But it doesn't matter, because they're talking to you now in a different way than a few years ago. Because the EDL become more respectable in its way that it's been doing business over the years, that people now are wanting to talk about the EDL and, you know, maybe future demo, maybe not go to them, but are interested in how things go. I bet you have quite a few of your friends asking, well, how did it go, Frank? And I'd love to go,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. But that's good. That's good.
Yeah. But the thing is, you see, it's not... They all learn... Well, we all know that the press is lying until they're saying something nasty about somebody we don't like, and then we believe it. I mean, I've seen through that, and I try not... I must admit, when George Galloway takes a pasted, I must admit, or when somebody called Mohammed gets nicked, I must admit, I feel a little bit of a schadenfreude there, but I still got to take it with a pinch of salt, you know?
Yeah. No, I understand
you can't live down everybody else. The only known bloke they know in the EDL is me. They hear about it when I get back, and they say, oh, yeah, how many of you got arrested this time? And I say, none of us. They was all a bunch of wankers throwing bottles at us. And then, suddenly, because they know me. If I went round pelting tats and throwing bottles, they wouldn't want to know the EDL, even if everybody else was in the choir.
I think that's a good valid point there. I think the thing about it is, Frank, and so many times, the restrainedness that we've had with the members, you know, in a pub, and the police, this was, I think it was, not, wasn't it, one of the pubs, Frank, that the police went in with dogs, and women got thrown down the stairs, dragged out the toilet, thrown down the stairs, and they were so restrained, there was 165 killed, wasn't it? 169 people arrested, and there was only three that was actually charged. It was just a bloody excuse to set the doors on people, bash people on the heads with their bloody truncheons, trying to make a point. And all they've done is really, you know, people more determined. You know, when you get in rough end of things, it makes you more determined to carry on. And that is exactly what's happened. You know, you can bash us around on that, but we still keep coming back. And that is the thing, and I think we're really starting to realise that we're not going away. You can bash us, you can kick us around, but we will keep coming back. You know, there's no doubt about it. So they're having to think different tactics. What they've done, it does seem to me, which just me just speculating, is what you said to him, that they've made Tommy and Kevin an offer, you know, that they, you know, basically all the, maybe the financial burden have been lifted.
Well,
charged,
I mean, I thought about this long and hard when the news first broke, and I batted it back and to, and I thought, what would make me do that? And I believe the answer to be that the British government have made them an offer that they could not turn down, and it must have been pretty serious. That's my personal view. Time will tell. Time will tell.
But it's the way that they wanted to... What got me... I don't know about you, Frank, and Kel, and to Michael. It's the way that Tommy was in the middle of these Islamists. They was Islamists once. They was, you know, out there trying to kill souls, whatever they were trying to do going back.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they were paraded around like a trophy. And we have beheaded the leadership of the EDL sort of thing. And
well,
are you having a laugh? And it was meant to be a public display of humiliation.
As a theory, yeah. What if the government is imagine you've been put in solitary confinement for the umpteenth time on another umpteenth bloody trumped up rhubarb exaggerated charge.
Yep.
And you sat there for 6 months on solitary, because if you come out, you're going to get murdered and everybody's going to look the other way, because it's culturally insensitive to stop Muslims murdering people. And then you face all that, and the governor and somebody else, probably a psychologist, has come and met you and told you all that, and then said, you're pissing against the wind, sunshine. We're going to bump you off. If we're going to let them bump you off. How many times have we warned you? And they will if you don't stop. Now, you only have a way of doing it is this. And Tom's gone, I'll never surrender, but I'm still going to win. Play them at their own game. Okay then, Sunshine. But when you listen to him, he still hasn't changed his tune.
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, it was though that it was supposed to be made of Tommy and Kev was... You see, I know Kev. I've spoke to him in depth. And I knew the way that he was fidgeting about. He wasn't a happy bunny. He wasn't happy, but he was doing it because it needed to be, because it was there to be done. It had to be done. I know that. You know that, Frank. Body language. Do you know what I mean?
I shared a bed two nights with him in Darlington. We was on our way on our way back to the demo in Newcastle. I got in touch with Roger. Said, "Is anybody going up there? Can I bum a lift?" And then I went across to Eltham. That's another 2 o'clock in the morning journey. Anyway, I got across to Eltham, and then we picked up Kev, and they said, "Where are you staying?" And I said, "Well, I'll book in when I get there." He said, "Oh, it might be all booked," and it was. Kev just said, "Ah, come bunk with me." So I spent two nights bunked in with him. We had a great time up there.
Tommy and Kev, great guys, and but as I say, it was supposed to be done. I don't know. I'm speculating because I don't know. I'm like most of us. I mean, as Tim said, none of us knew what their plans were.
I'm quite sure that the theory we're all coming round to is the one that makes the most sense, is that he was made an offer he couldn't refuse. They said, walk away from the EDL and join a government-sponsored organisation that's run by Muslims that is ostensibly against extremism of all types. And that was the offer that was made to him. And if he had refused it, I think things might have gone quite hard for him. Now, we're not going to know the truth for a while, but I'm pretty sure we're all working the way round.
It will
to
come
that
out.
Well, I reckon,
the lines, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you've got to say what is most likely.
Promoted to the Premier Division.
Yeah, I think you've got to say to yourself what is most likely, and that seems to me to be the most likely scenario. Now, it may not be 100% true, but I think there's sufficient truth in it to keep us going until we get some formal confirmation one way or the other, which might be a few months down the line.
I would agree, and I would also say, I will stand by what Tommy said. Give him 6 months.
Give me six months.
We spoke about this in depth, haven't we, before? Yeah. And it's only right, and of course the EDL will continue as it's done. Yet we've got a meeting coming up in January, which Tim was talking about. Things are a little bit different. It's more democratic. We've got the ROs, and as I say, as Tim said, he's not a leader as such. It's a democratic thing. I like that. I got to admit, Frank, I do like the feel of the way the EDL is starting to evolve. I don't know if you agree with me, Frank. It just seems that it's right.
Like,
more people have got a voice.
It's like when you've got a child. You bring your child up and you help him. And one day he wants to learn to ride a bike and you run behind him and you hold the saddle and then he's pedaling and then suddenly he's pedaling faster than you can go. So you let it go. And next thing you know, he looks around, sees you're not holding and he falls off. And then you talk to him about it and say, don't be daft. And off he goes. And this is what we've got to do.
That's a good analogy of the way things are going, Frank. That's a great... Would you not agree? That's a great analogy of what...
That sounds like a pretty good way of putting it. I mean, we all have to support the EDL now in its time of flux, if you like, until such time new direction has been decided and established and published by the leadership, then in the meantime, we can do everything. I mean, it's not as if we have to fall over ourselves to promote anything other than the truth. And I'm so pleased that when we had that poll on Sunday Morning Live, that it went the way it did. because it shows that the public...
We're going to keep rolling that out, aren't we, mate?
Well,
I think we should.
I think that any time anybody says to you, well, of course, the EDL is a spent force now, isn't it? You can say, well, actually, no. And you can point to that poll as being a huge, huge pointer in British politics. You don't come any closer to a unanimous 100% verdict than... On that poll, 95% is
and
as good
a
good
BBC
as
poll at that,
BBC
isn't it?
A BBC a poll taken
that
on a
blurred me.
That is hostile to us. That is
anyway.
You would kill for a poll like that.
Yeah, they would absolutely, and that's what makes me think we're on the right track.
I've got to, because I don't want us to just get thrown off, and this does happen now and again. It's that all of a sudden the show just closes out on me, and it's really embarrassing. But I'd like to thank you all for taking part in the archives tonight and part of the whole show. It's been absolutely...
No need to go there.
My pleasure.
No need to thank us. We're here because we want to be, mate. There's no need to thank us. This is a chat.
No, it's something that I always do, Frank. I can't help it. It's just...
And Frank, will you please inbox me on Facebook just so that I know you got home safe? Thank you.
I'll look for you on Facebook.
Take care, Frank, tomorrow. I'm sure you'll be fine, but, you know, we all think we count you out and count you back in, mate. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
That's it, mate. Well, you have a great day tomorrow, Frank, and, you know, and hope it all goes well. I hope the speeches are great. And hopefully, Frank, get people to take videos and all that, and, you know, have a chat to people, video phones and all that. The more YouTube clips and that, the better. So there you go.
Right, that's a good idea, that. Right.
There you go, mate. Just have a chat to everybody. Don't forget, we want little clips here and clips there, And you can upload, and then it's something that we can run with, can't we, as well?
Yeah.
So anyway, I'd like to thank you all tonight. It's been great once again. But I'm need my cup of tea. I ain't had a cup of tea for about an hour and a half, and I'm really dry.
Yeah,
and the one you have is probably freezing cold by now.
I drank it, but no, it was cold when I drank it, Kel. So I want a nice hot one. I'd like to thank Kel. I've got to thank you as well for little bits of information given me in the chat. I'm always keeping a close eye on different things and that. And it's been fantastic. Michael, are you still there? Is he still?
Yes, I'm just listening. That's fine.
Oh my goodness, Michael! We thought we lost you.
I'm going to give you.
I'm going to give you
a minute and a half or something, or rather, just. To round off your thoughts for this evening. So,
well,
go
thanks
ahead.
So much. Let me share with everyone a great experience I had. Monday was Veterans Day, and of course it's called Remembrance Day in the UK, and I think in Canada and other countries. But anyway, in America it's Veterans Day. So all of you know, I say this very humbly, for many years I've been doing a lot of charitable work for our country's warriors, you know, who've gone overseas to Iraq, gone to Afghanistan, been on the battlefield, fought these savages and barbarians in a physical war. And I had the privilege to go into the largest military hospital in America on Monday and spend time with some of these great heroes. One in particular, because it ties in directly to our discussion of Islam, was a United States Army Ranger who got badly wounded by a suicide bomber. And that's very representative and kind of exclusive to Islam. It was a female Afghan who was wearing a burqa, and under the burqa was a suicide vest. And she detonated it, and then other things ensued. There were many other explosions from other IEDs, and there were four American soldiers were killed. This Army Ranger he lost one eye. His other eye is kind of affected. Thank God no other serious injuries. And I just thought I would share that. Yeah, I've been doing this for 5 years. I'm so grateful to God and to just everything that I've had this in my life. My dad was in the Army, and, you know, I'm very pro-military. and I'm very pro-British military, Canadian military, any Western nation that has a military that is fighting the scourge, those are great people.
Bless you, Michael.
Yeah, God bless you,
thank
brother.
You.
You've got great work.
Yep, definitely.
And what can I say? Full appreciation what you're doing. And
I'd love to come to the UK one day. I'd love to come to the UK one day if it's possible. And of course, meet members of the EDL and meet.
We'd love to.
Mike, this is a genuine offer.
So God willing, maybe that can happen.
Mike, this is a genuine offer.
You never know. That's what I say.
Mike.
Okay.
Quick message to Mike, please. Yeah, quick message to Mike. If you come in via Gatwick, let me know you're coming. I'll be there to pick you up, and I'm happy to sleep on the sofa. You've got a bed here any time you like, and it's not far from London.
Hey, that's a wonderful gesture you just made, and it means a lot.
And I said that in public. And I said that on the radio, not in the pub. I meant it.
Yeah,
I know
right
you
now,
Frank.
He's a great British patriot. Wow. Yeah, God bless you.
Thank you, guys, before we get actually thrown off,
we'll be back again this Sunday, but I'm going to play an exit tune, and it's one of my favourites. I know a lot of you love this tune as well. It's called The Lions of the EDL, and of course it's Alex and the Bandits, of course. So we'll be back again this Sunday. So from us all, from our panel this evening, with Kel, with Tim, with Michael and Frank. Good night, take care, stay safe, God bless you all, and we'll be back again this Sunday. With that, this is the exit theme for the night, Lions of the EDL. Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
Good night, guys.
Remember them or let me forget.
Yes, Alan.
We owe those soldiers some respect, so go and lay a wreath at the cenotaph, it's sacred, says she. You're a lion beyond the grave. You're a lion beyond the grave. You're a lion beyond the grave. You're a lion in the dark. If Woods and Bassett was your home, well, those brave men were sacrificed to win democracy. What's going on in 10 Downing?